and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to two times in 1 week, Luke Buer, as the Gopher Gridiron Radio crew gets together one last time before I say and go bon voyage, which...
You mean, I think what you're trying to say is there's going to be multiple commits, right?
Golly, I hope not. I'm setting sail here in the morning, flying out to Seattle and taking a cruise, which I've been on a boat for probably thousands of hours in my life. My father always had a boat of some kind growing up, but I've never been on one like this. So it's either going to go really well in terms of learning about cruise ships and the people on it, or it's going to be very interesting.
I guess my question for you is, have you ever heard the theory of boat prison?
Boat prison?
Yeah.
No, that's a new one to me.
So this is the working theory that you're having such a horrible time, but you can actually never get off the boat and leave. You have to keep getting back on the boat, that you're tethered to it, and now you're in boat prison until your trip is over.
I mean, yeah, I suppose. And I'm like essentially disconnected because I want to have cell service, which would be nice.
Yeah, which would be nice.
I enjoy it with my wife and immediate family there. Recharge a little bit.
I'm a little surprised you didn't want me to man the reins at Gopher Illustrated on the football
side.
You
are more than welcome. Anybody but Shady Side 50, which for any GI members out there that are listening, golly.
I can't.
Anybody but him, they can take over the reins before we get into summer splash season, which officially kicks off 2 weeks from when we're recording this, which I'm now rubbing my temples thinking about the 25 high school kids that'll be here, but that's a problem for Ryan after the cruise, Luke.
I just think it's funny how much time it would take me to actually read all of the message board. Like, there's no way I could do that. Just not a chance.
You'd have a lot of fun with it, I'm sure. If for only a week and you know that I'm coming back to take care and hold your hand with it, I think you'd be all right.
All right. So last time we recorded, Ryan, we said, hey, there's a new feature on Spotify and you can leave comments.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what?
Oh, boy.
We got some comments.
Oh, golly gee. I don't know that I want to know. Do I want to know this close to me just being able to unplug? Are they nice or are they telling me how much they hate listening to my voice?
Joe said, love the comment section edition. Great podcast. Love listening. Don't miss one. Appreciate the great content. And he's from Illinois.
Shout out to Joe, man. I love that.
Another one, Jamie, talked about how much he loves the Timberwolves, and I won't read the whole thing, but his standout obscure Wolves are Ryan Gomes, Greg. I don't remember this guy, but it's Steamsma?
Lucas Buer. Are you kidding me?
That's
you don't
what I did.
Remember him off the end of the bench, big man?
I mean, maybe if I saw his face.
He was not great. The Greg Steamsma era was not a great era.
And then Anthony Tolliver. Definitely remember Anthony Tolliver. But yeah.
Who could forget those tall socks, my brother?
Yeah, no kidding. He had a hot minute with the Wolves. Yeah, I do like this comment section. So if you're a Spotify listener, feel free to drop us comments. As I remember, I'll try to get to some of them on the pod. But I think it's a cool new addition to Spotify, where I consume a lot of my content. So thanks for those people that engage. I didn't check the iTunes or Apple Podcast comments. Maybe we'll do that later. But it's definitely a fun way to interact with people. Obviously people interact on Gopher Illustrated, which is also always fun, Ryan. And then additionally, people interact on Twitter. Always love the lawn mowing gifts. So appreciate those people. And we're happy to help support your grass cutting adventures.
I'm a big lawn guy. The older I get, I'm turning... how old am I turning this, Luke?
I don't know.
I'm turning 33. Boy.
You're so old.
I am so old. But I'm that guy on your block that I like to take care of my lawn. And I like to... I think I told the story. I got 30 bags of mulch and I got like 10 bags of dirt. I had to put that down, get it mixed with the seed. And then I bought an edger. My family never used one of those growing up. Figured out, well, I suppose I got a nice house now. Might as well take care of it here in Roseville. But it's cathartic to me.
Sure.
Am I crazy here?
No, you're not crazy. You want to come over and make a plan for my house?
If you aren't you the guy who's got I forget what's in your backyard. Don't you have one of them pizza oven things?
I do have a pizza oven. I was mostly meaning the grass. I struggle with grass.
Well, I was just going to say, in return for me doing your lawn care, I'd love a nice little pizza out of there because you don't get to be my size. Yeah. If you don't enjoy a nice pizza, I'll tell you.
Yeah, we'll make you pizza sometime. I'm surprised I haven't made you pizza yet. We'll have to do that. Okay, we probably should talk some Gopher football. That's why people are here. They're less concerned about our opinions on grass products.
Lawn care, Alaska cruises.
Yeah.
The demographic on what a mid-May cruise looks like, which I think is not going to be very kid heavy because everybody's still in school for another couple of weeks.
Maybe.
But I also think it's too early in the season to where the 65 and older crowd wants to wait till it warms up a little bit. Trust me when I say I'm very curious to see.
All right.
I probably won't report back on this podcast about it because who cares, but I'm way too invested in what the demographic on this thing is.
All right. Let's talk some defense. We'll also talk some special teams, but let's start with the defense. I think probably the biggest thing we have to get to is the change at the top, my friend.
Yeah, a new defensive coordinator here in 2025. But before I talk about Danny Collins, I will give the same disclaimer I gave on the offensive side. Which,
oh, great.
Well, that's the funniest part, Luke, is I gave this disclaimer, and then guess what happened? I still heard from multiple player parents about XYZ thing, but my disclaimer is I don't hate your child or I don't hate your nephew, I don't know what their relationship is to you on this team, how you related to this Gopher football player, but if I don't talk glowingly of them or don't talk about them at all because you think I don't know what I'm talking about, which sound like my wife in that aspect, but I don't hate your child. I don't hate your nephew. I'm just trying to tell it how I think it is after seeing three spring practices from talking with people within the Gopher football program here heading into the summer months. So disclaimer out of the way. I don't know why I say it, especially after last time, and I still heard from people, but I appreciate all of you for caring about them. That's what matters
most. It's possible that they got a timestamp, you know, and then they just got sent a small section, so they missed the disclaimer. So I'm going to put out my small disclaimer. I say this in the most sarcastic way possible. I do hate your child. I do hate your whatever your relationship is to this person.
I'm just that
kind of person. No, I mean that in all sarcasm.
He means it dead serious. By the way. Again, you don't know this guy over the internet. You're just listening to him on your treadmill or as you're mowing your lawn or what you're doing. Luke is a very spiteful person.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the amount of things he's done to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially since we're talking defense, if you've ever missed a tackle, I hate you. So,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. We'll never forget about it, and we'll only talk in a negative light about your son.
All right.
So to your point, there is a brand new defensive coordinator for the third straight season as Corey Heatherman, your defensive coordinator for the 2024 season, after signing an extension in December, reneges on it and heads to the other U down in Miami, Florida for a significant boatload of cash, an additional year on his deal. He was set to make, I believe it was around $1.1, $1.2 million here at the University of Minnesota if he would have stayed in 2025, which he got a well-deserved bump in my opinion, but he chose to seek greener pastures, beachier pastures down at the Miami, Florida, of which I believe I've heard from very reputable sources that he is going to be making on average $1.6 million per year on average. And guess what, Lucas?
Mm-mm.
If Miami doesn't have the season they think they're going to have, and say Mario Cristobal gets fired, so I think expectations for that program and where they are in Mario Cristobal's tenure, Corey Heatherman gets to then collect over $3 million to go away in something that's probably not going to be his fault.
Yeah.
So it's a heck of a deal if you can get it. But unfortunately, Minnesota got broke-boyed by their ever sad salary pool situation, which nobody here wants to be about for the umpteenth straight season.
I mean, sure. We don't need to debate that. I mean, also, there's some advantages to taking that. There's no state income tax in Florida.
Miami, Florida can just go buy whatever player they want, which they did here in the spring portal period because they have a lot of money, especially compared to the University of Minnesota, which last I checked, Luke, They were 14th in revenue in the Big Ten last fiscal year of data, and compare that to Miami, of which now to comparing the Big Ten to comparing the ACC, but I think we can go back to the 80s and remember some of the vehicles that the Miami Hurricane players were driving back then. I think a lot of those players and a lot of those coaches have been well compensated for a very long time. Plus, you've got a much better recruiting base.
Sure. Yeah, the recruiting base you definitely can't argue with. Okay, so let's talk about Danny Collins and what we can expect from a Danny Collins-led defense versus, well, we've had a couple defensive coordinators. So who do you think he resembles more?
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, we're going to find out. But it's something to where Danny Collins has been with PJ Fleck for a very, very, very long time. I mean, you go back to I wrote stories about him going back in the day about how when he got his start at Western Michigan, he was a volunteer that was working third shift and he was sleeping in essentially at the facility in like utility closets because he's 23 years old, doesn't have a lot of money. He's trying to make his dream happen, but he doesn't have a lot to go on. So he's able to work his way up from grad assistant to he finally got his break a couple of years ago as the safeties coach, of which I think a lot of you have enjoyed the safeties play over the years with Danny Collins in terms of Tyler Newbin. And now most recently here, Coy Parrish, Kerry Brown, and Aiden Goosby, and we'll see who also steps up. But the thing is, Danny Collins was incredibly tight with Joe Rossi during their time together. They spent a lot of time when Rossi back in the day was just an analyst. Very, very tight those two, I think, still till this day. But then Danny Collins last year was the number two under Corey Heatherman. He was the one that Heatherman bounced game plan ideas off, things of that nature. And when Heatherman left for Miami, Minnesota and PJ Fleck elected to say, we don't want to make this a giant search. We want to do what we know. And that's what Danny Collins is going to do. He's 32 years old, which a fellow 32-year-old, which how do I feel about what I'm doing with my life at 32 compared to what Danny Collins is now doing with his life at 32? That's an existential question for another day. But he is the third youngest, I believe, power four defensive coordinator. And the thing he stressed to the media here all spring about your specific question, Luke, what is your defense going to look like? Now, I think it's stylistically going to be very much the same. 4-2-5, same thing Rossi ran, same thing Heatherman ran. But the thing he has nicknamed or coined his defense in a program that loves itself a good acronym is the Havoc defense. The H stands for how, which is obviously a big PJ Fleck thing. It's how, attack, violence, won, and compete. Now, I would argue Danny Collins, and we'll get into it here over the next hour, isn't walking into the greatest of situations defensively with so many guys gone to the NFL or just gone to just different spots. They're losing a lot of guys who played a lot of snaps. But I think for Collins, he's going to at least get an opportunity here. It's not one where the first game is Nebraska or North Carolina. It's Buffalo, which is a quality MAC team. But he gets to kind of figure what his defense is good at in these first two games against Buffalo and then something called Northwestern State before Minnesota has to travel out to San Francisco and take on Cal Berkeley. But there's a lot unknown about, is he going to be as attacking as what Corey Heatherman was? Is he going to be as zone heavy and kind of less blitz heavy like Joe Rossi was? My guess is he's going to be a blend of whatever it is. And my hope is he's going to do whatever the player's strengths are and then kind of tailor it to that like any good defensive coordinator would.
All right. So maybe let's start going position by position and start just right at the front of the defense. We'll start with defensive tackle. I can highlight some of the departures and then we can talk about the guys that are left. And then we can talk about some of the additions as well. This is kind of the same format we did with offense. So in terms of departures, you had Logan Richter graduate. You also had Darnell Jeffries graduate. You had Luther McCoy and Martin Owusu. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Martin Owusu.
Oh, I nailed it. Okay, so they went to Hawaii and Fresno State respectively. And let's just talk about returners. Obviously, the big names that are going to return are going to be Devon Eastern and Jalen Logan Redding. They've played a lot of snaps, right? And then you can fill in what's left, Ryan. I know there's a couple key transfer additions that they've had, but what else do you kind of expect to see in defensive tackle, a position that was maybe a little bit light last year, while they have some what seemingly is higher end talent or big contributors? This isn't a position that you can get away with not rotating.
Well, the other thing I got to lead with here is Minnesota has a new defensive line coach.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Last year, because for those of you who need a little refresher course, Winston Dilaudy-Boudère III is now the defensive line coach for the Arizona Cardinals, where he meets up with a former Gopher teammate of his who's calling the defense for the Arizona Cardinals, and Edina's own Nick Rallis. So you've got two Gophers that are prominent members now of the Arizona Cardinals staff, which means that Minnesota's got another new defensive line coach. They elected to elevate Dennis Dotton Carter into that role, where Dotton Carter has been with Minnesota since 2023, where he came over from Yale. Now, the connection to how does Dennis Dotton Carter even get to Minnesota in the first place? He was, I believe, he and Joe Rossi back in the day coached together at Maine. And then when Dotton Carter decided that he wanted to give somebody, you know, he wanted to get into the Big Ten, any opportunity he could, he took a senior defensive analyst. He's been a longtime defensive line coach. I mean, to the point where he was a co-defensive coordinator at Yale before he was like, this is my shot to jump up to the Big Ten. And he paid off because now he's a defensive line coach. Now, if you think of Winston, you think of energy, you think of jumping, you think of all things of that nature. Dot isn't that type of guy. He's early 40s, much more, I'll say, stoic. But from talking with guys like Devin Eastern here this spring, it's still very much in the same nature of very much a teacher. Now, you talk about the defensive tackle position, and I think you have to lead off with that guy in Devin Eastern, of which the former four-star from Shakopee, I mean, he's started every game for Minnesota the last two seasons. In those games, he's got 55 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks. Now, Pro Football Focus has been very bullish on him over the last 2 years, I would say, grading him as an above-average player in the Big Ten, number 91, for those of you trying to rack your brain, considering I think by the time I get back from Alaska, we're going to be about 100 days until kickoff already, which I don't know where the time goes, Luke, but it passes very slowly but very fast at the same time. I'm sure we all say that every single day of our lives. But I still believe there is another gear for Eastern to find here, and that's where I would probably have him. If you're looking at 2026 NFL draft prospects in your mind, I think he's one of those guys that people don't think about. I think Devin Eastern's got an NFL ceiling. Now, he has to take the next step, especially as a pass rusher, but he is their best defensive tackle in a tier by himself to me. Now, they still do return Jalen Logan Redding there as well, who has started – I think games at 3 different positions along the defensive line at defensive end, both defensive tackle spots. He was all Big Ten honorable mention a year ago. He has started, as I said, double digit games for Minnesota in each of the last 3 seasons. I mean, that's a very good floor for Minnesota there with Eastern and Logan Redding. My question is, will Danny Collins do what I've been screaming into the ether for, I think, multiple years now, and play more defensive tackles? Because my big worry here on the defensive line is depth. I'm not worried about 1 and 2 and 3, and 3 being Anthony Smith, who's actually a number 1, but we'll get to him when I talk about defensive end. I worry, Luke, because Devin Eastern and Jalen Logan Redding are coming off career highs in snaps. And I didn't quite understand that last fall, when you had, I think, some bodies that could have helped you, whether it's a run-stuffing Pat Williams light type of body like Logan Richter. You traveled to every game, younger guys like Martin Owusu or Theo Randall. They never played. You had an older guy like Nate Becker. He really never played. I understand that the staff probably viewed it last season, if I'm parsing between the tea leaves here, that there would have been a significant drop in play. We get into the whole discussion, Luke, of if a guy is gassed, a guy like Devin Eastern, let's say, I mean, how effective is he at, say, 75% because he's gassed compared to 100% Theo Randall, Nate Becker, or Martin Owusu type from last year? Now, I would rather throw at the guy who's going to give you everything he has. And I'm not saying that the guy playing his 52nd snap is not, but he's just, he's tired, man. And I think at points, especially towards the latter half of the Big Ten, the defensive line got run down because they've only played five guys essentially by the time November came along. And I just hope that between Dotton Carter and Danny Collins, they recognize that. And that's where you're still going to play Devin Eastern quite a bit. You're still going to play Jalen Logan Redding quite a bit. But are you going to be able to give some snaps to a couple of transfers, which in theory, these two grad transfer guys in Stony Brooks, Rushon Lawrence, and then I would love for you to try and enunciate the Purdue transfer.
Yeah, I feel like this is just not really fair.
Again, this is what the people listen for. If you want to get your Spotify comment read by Luke Buehr, you need to hear Luke Buehr at least attempt what is his best bit.
Okay, Purdue transfer Mo Omoto? Omode?
I think it's Amonde.
Amonde?
I think so. Now, I'll figure it out by the time the season starts. But right. You brought in a couple of grad transfers that, in theory, should help with that specific problem. Now, in theory, I hear what you say. Trust what you do. I've said that on this podcast now for however long this is in existence. It's one of my father's favorite things to tell me even to this day. So I hear that the staff has addressed it. Now, they went out and got two guys. So in theory, a guy like Rushon Lawrence, which I'll say this, I'm going to temper expectations for Rushon Lawrence a little bit because he's about 265, 270 pounds. Now at Stony Brook, which is a CAA FCS team, I believe it's the same conference that Max Brosmer comes from.
Okay.
Actually, he was first team all conference last year, was one of the best pass rushers that they had out there. He was also great against the run. He had an 83 run defense grade. Be a Pro Football Focus. But I think in my mind, he's probably like a 3-4 in an ideal world. And I'm saying this in an ideal world, he's like a 300 snap a season guy, which is you're talking 20, 30 plays a game at that point. And probably between three technique, which you're going to be a little undersized there, or you can put him on early downs out at five technique to spell Anthony Smith. In spots, but he's just not a very big guy. And that's okay. We've seen some undersized defensive tackles like Luke's favorite, Jerry Kill. I mean, folks, when I say this, I don't mean it in jest. The way Luke Buehr talks about Steven Richardson this day, the big Stove himself. Now, I'm not saying that I think they're very much kind of different players because Stove was closer to 300 pounds where Lawrence is 270. I think that because of the weight, now he's a very strong guy. I mean, he's of legal drinking age. I just don't know that you want him in there against, say, a team like Iowa, who's just going to try to run the ball into the oblivion. But against some of these other teams, to start the year against Buffalo and Northwestern State and Cal, he's going to get a long run in my mind. Now, to spell Devin Eastern at that one tech spot, Minnesota went out and got Luke. Would you like to enunciate the last name one more time for me?
The Purdue guy again?
Yep.
I don't know why you're doing this to me. Mo Omande?
So Omande
sure.
Has played a lot of football for Purdue the last 3 years. He played as a true freshman back in 2022, played as a true sophomore in all 12 games on defense in 2023, and then he set a career high in snaps, around 300 defensive snaps for Purdue last fall. Now, the connection here to Minnesota is Purdue's defensive coordinator from last year was not Ryan Walters. It was a guy by the name of Kevin Kane. Now, both of those gentlemen got fired because Purdue's got a brand new staff. But Kevin Kane is now at Minnesota as an assistant linebackers coach. He's helping Mariano Sorimarin with the linebackers, which we'll get to here in a moment. But he's also helping Danny Collins game plan. And again, he's a longtime defensive coordinator. Said good things, I would imagine, about the way that he played in his defense the last couple of years. So if that is the four that you're going to play, Devin Eastern and the Purdue transfer, plus you have Jalen Logan Redding and Rushon Lawrence, I'd also argue you've got some other guys there like Nate Becker, Theo Randall, and a bunch of freshmen like Riley Sunrum, Jalen Hicks, Mo Sain. there's no excuse to me this year to not, like, I don't want Devin Eastern and Jalen Logan Redding setting career highs in snaps. You brought in transfers to address that problem. Plus, you've got an older guy in Nate Becker who has played in spots, or some younger guys like Theo Randall, Riley Sunrum, others. They need to just play more guys at defensive tackle, Luke. And that's the thing I hope to be talking about by the end of September when we get 3-4 games worth of data. But that's my big thing here with defensive tackle. I think they have some top-end guys like Devin Eastern, Jalen Logan Redding, but I want to see them actually use more of their depth to see if it can be comparable to the starters. Because if you just don't use it, you just don't know. And they can scream at me and say, you know, sources, I will tell you, that was one of the conversations that I didn't agree with some folks over there about was, well, we've seen it in practice. I have seen a lot of things in practice for Gopher football for 15 years. You got to at least try it out there at some point. And that's where I hope in September that they do. But that's kind of where I see things at defensive tackle right now.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about defensive end to close out the defensive line position. Key departures, obviously, Judd Joyner, who was drafted, went to the NFL. I think Danny Strigaug, I think he's on an NFL roster at the moment. I don't remember which
Joyner
one.
Joyner is a UDFA, which Judd Joyner not getting drafted surprised me. I know he didn't have a great year compared to what I think expectations also were for him.
And he tested well.
I assume so.
Yeah.
I mean, from the NFL scouts that I talk to, now I don't have a Rolodex like, say, Daniel House does in that regard, but I think there were some people very surprised that Judd Joyner didn't get drafted, or specifically that if he was going to be an undrafted free agent, that he didn't end up with the Arizona Cardinals with Winston, which I don't know what the offer was that the Vegas Raiders made, but that's where he is now. I think Danny Strigaug's with the Jacksonville Jaguars as a UDFA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. If I said that he was drafted, I meant to say he was not drafted, but he's in the NFL. And then Hayden Schwartz is gun portaling. Obviously, in terms of people back, I think the big names are going to be Anthony Smith and Jackson Howard. You also have Lucas Finnessy. He's a key contributor that came back. Yeah, you can fill in the rest, Ryan. The other names, you know, they've got some transfers. And they've got some freshmen and whatnot. I'm not particularly familiar with those, but yeah, what can you expect from defensive line? There's a lot of production that's gone especially in terms of snaps.
Well, one of the questions I just had, you know, speaking in the NFL draft was Minnesota's got a streak going. I believe it's 6 consecutive drafts now where they've had a first or a second round pick. Because you had Antoine Winfield, Rashad Bateman, Boye Mafe, John Michael Schmitz, Tyler Newbin, and then here most recently, Ariante Ursery went in the second round. And the question I've gotten a lot is, well, if that streak's going to continue, who's it going to be? And I'll say this. Maybe I'm drinking too much of the maroon and gold color Kool-Aid. Maybe I've just seen too much. But I think there's a pretty decent shot that thing gets to 7. And if it does, it's going to be because of one guy, and that is Anthony Smith. I mean, Anthony Smith had himself a season last year. I don't think enough people were probably talking about it by the end of it, because we're talking about a guy who finally it started to click consistently between him. Now, he played a lot of 5 technique, which is strong side defensive end, played a lot of 3 technique defensive tackle. He had 11.5 tackles for loss that led the team, 6 sacks. I mean, he registered 3 or more pressures in 6 of the final 7 games. I can confidently say, at least in my opinion, Anthony Smith got better every single game. And if he continues to get, I'll just say, take the next steps, because he looks like Tarzan. I mean, he looks like every single NFL lineman that is out there, especially that teams use a first or a second round pick on. It's 6'5" plus 290 pounds. I mean, he has made plays on tape. He can play defensive tackle. He can play defensive end. I mean, he has taken over drives. I just think that there is a ceiling left for him. Now, the question I almost have in my mind is, if I know that, so does every other opposing offensive coordinator and offensive line coach.
Yeah,
so
they absolutely do.
Yeah, and that's where he's going to be the number one guy that people try to take out of the game and a given game plan if you're an offensive line. Now, that's where the beauty of Anthony Smith is. He can play wherever. He can play one technique between the guard and the center, or you can put him outside the tackle, wherever you think you can get the best pass rush advantage against the worst offensive lineman. That is the beauty of the Pennsylvania native. So maybe I'm just too bullish on him, and I understand that he wasn't all Big Ten technically, which I can't. If Darius Taylor and Daniel Jackson and Anthony Smith weren't all Big Ten, like, I understand that it's 18 teams, and I would be gobsmacked if Anthony Smith. I'll tell you this much. When we do the draft prior to the season about all Big Ten honors, if Anthony Smith isn't going 1-1, I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah, I really feel like I got to give it to myself this year, the first draft pick, because I agree with you. I think maybe in fairness, we should keep him off of the draft eligible board. But that would not be the spirit of the history of what we've set with Daniel House, which I'm excited. At this point, we Daniel House should still be joining us, as he still seems to be an active member of the media. I'm waiting for, you know, some school, maybe like the University of Minnesota or some NFL team to pick him up, but that's not my job. So
it's, trust me when I say Daniel House is one of the smartest football people I know. And I think, unfortunately for him, because of the way he looks, which he's a 6-foot ginger, compared to maybe someone like myself, who's, Luke would call me 6-foot. I'd call him then 5'10".
Yeah.
But as a 6'4" guy, don't get me started about hashtag football guys, but House hopefully will be on a college or NFL scouting team here very, very soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
So I talked glowingly about Anthony Smith, and unfortunately, I'm going to sound like a Debbie Downer again, because the drop off from Anthony Smith to whoever you want to talk about next, I think, is substantial. And that was going to happen regardless, because you're without Ja Joyner, who started for years. You're without Danny Strigow, who started for years. And the guy that I think would start at rush end replacing Strigow is probably going to be Jackson Howard, the former number one player in the state, went to LSU for a season, came back. I just don't know what to expect. You know, I think for Jackson Howard, he's still a young player. It's going into his third year, so is Fargo's Carter Menz, who I think you're going to see those two split time, especially in the month of September. I think Howard is more of a power rusher, I will say, compared to Carter Menz, who is more of a speed and try to turn the corner guy. Now, both of them have put on enough weight. I'm not worried about weight with these two guys, like maybe some linebackers we'll get into a little bit later. Carter Menz is now over 240 pounds, probably closer to 245, and Jackson Howard is over 240 pounds. And for those of you who went to the Parents Bear event at Jack's Cafe, you got to meet Jackson Howard, one of the nicest kids that you'll ever have. Just took so much time to meet with everybody. And again, I can't say enough good things about him as a person. I just think neither one of these two guys have played a lot of football. And that concerns me, because those two guys specifically at rush end, Jackson Howard and Carter Menz, thus far in their careers have played less than 150 defensive snaps combined. Now, I understand that I'm essentially speaking out of both sides of my mouth to an extent here, Luke, because I just spent the entire defensive tackle one standing on a soapbox saying, you got to play more guys. Well, this is part of why Danny Strigow and Ja Joyner, I mean, they're very good players, which is why they're now trying to make NFL teams here over the next 4 months. But they didn't rotate enough there, in my opinion. And so now you just get to throw those guys to the fire and say sink or swim, which I'm sure they're excited about. Now, I'm not very bullish on Lucas Finessey here, just because he's had some very unfortunate injury luck. And I honestly saw him play more five technique behind Anthony Smith here this spring. Now, I think that says a lot about the lack of depth that they have at five technique behind Anthony Smith, which, number one, if Anthony Smith, I'm knocking on wood here, I'm not going to do it obnoxiously into the mic, I don't know what they do, because number one, he's their most talented defensive player. And I say that with all peace and love to Coy Parrish or Kerry Brown or Devin Eastern in that regard. But he is such a linchpin for this defense, because he plays at a very important spot and one they don't have a lot of depth behind. Now, I'd also say I wouldn't be shocked to see Matt Kingsbury or Emmanuel Carmo, the early enrollee true freshman from Robbinsdale Cooper, same place that Jackson Howard is from. maybe they get some reps as Minnesota tries to figure out a pass rush. But that's the thing I want to see from this defensive line group. I'm not worried about stopping the run. I'm really not. Plus, I even look at some of these early teams on the schedule, Luke. Like California's entire offense from last season got bought off on the portal. And then Buffalo is a quality MAC team, but I mean, they're really not going to be tested in that regard until after the first bye week when you start to get into teams like Rutgers and Kirk Soraka. So I want to see before that first bye week, can Minnesota just get some quality reps from Jackson Howard, Carter Mens, you know, guys like Lucas Finney, because I know Anthony Smith is a really good football player, but are they going to be able to lean on a guy like, say, Stephen Curtis from Illinois State, who I got to see him here this spring, played a lot for the Redbirds the last couple of seasons. I believe Illinois State's still in the Missouri Valley. I mean, he played over 600 snaps last year, which is an insane amount of snaps for Illinois State. I just think he's a year away with filling out his body. And I talked about earlier, maybe Rushon Lawrence can give you some five technique snaps as well. I just think, Luke, that they're very top heavy on the defensive line. Like Anthony Smith, Devin Eastern are in a tier by themselves. Then you drop down to Jalen Logan Redding, and I'd say a tier beneath them. And then is a significant drop off to what do we have with guys like Jackson Howard, Carter Mens, Rushon Lawrence, you know, these type of guys that I understand you need to play them to find out, but I'm just telling you, I think 1 through 3 is really good, but then we got to see what they have in 4 through 8 on the defensive line.
All right, we should probably talk about linebacker. We have another new coach here at this position, but not an unfamiliar name.
One that you spent years absolutely chastising, lambasting. What other term do you want me to use the way you talked about Mariano Sorry-Marin?
I don't know. You got some time. Go for it. This is I control when we end production, so...
I'm never one to get long-winded. I think every listener of this podcast, unfortunately, knows that. But with Corey Heatherman going to Miami, Minnesota needed a new linebacker coach. And they said, how about the guy who was working with Corey Heatherman as an analyst? That would be the young man, Mariano Sorry-Marin, is back in everyone's lives here. Number 55 is now coaching the linebackers in a full-time role. So I'm excited to, if at any point the Gopher football program will let their assistant coaches talk to the local media outside of their coordinators, of which I heard about that in my comments about that on the offensive side, I would just tell you the defensive side, I don't care anymore. So put your assistants out there. We haven't been able to talk to so many of these guys now for, I don't know, 12 months at this point. So I hope to be able to tell Mariano's story here on Gopher Illustrated in the next few weeks. But I think that might be wishful thinking. Now, the big departure from this group is first team All Big Ten linebacker Cody Lindenberg, who did it all. And he wore the green dot, which meant he was the one getting the call from the defensive coordinator, then relaying it to the defense. He was the best linebacker they've had probably since Jack Gibbons back there, which I think Jack Gibbons is still kicking around in the NFL. I think he's with the New England Patriots still.
Yeah.
So he did everything for this defense. And they did lose some guys to the transfer portal, like, say, Tyler Stolsky, who's at Florida Atlantic now, former Hutchinson guy, Alex Elliott's at NDSU. I'm very curious to see what life after Cody Lindenberg looks like. Now, I got a preview of that here this spring, and I think the guy that they're hoping takes another step forward is Maverick Baranowski.
And he got better. Like, I think it's worth noting. I just wanted to note one other thing about Cody Lindenberg. He did have the option to come back to school and chose not to. And that's not a criticism to him. Like he was drafted. I'm sure it was a goal of his all along. But I think that's something that we'll be able to track going forward. That some of these folks that might be fringe NFL players, like we might see more of them coming back, depending on what they can contribute. But yeah, back to Maverick, he improved a lot from first year to second year.
In terms of playing significant amount of time. Yeah. I mean, you'll remember back to 2023 where essentially him and Devin Williams were thrown into the fire because of injuries, where Cody Lindenberg just couldn't get right. And there was some, that'll be a story I tell one day in terms of the Cody Lindenberg injury situation from 2023, but not enough time has passed there. So I would imagine it's going to be Maverick Baranowski, of which they put him in front of the media, which if you put anybody in front of the media, here in this market, let me tell you, that means you think that they're going to be a contributor for you. I think that alongside him, it's a little bit more of a question mark. Is it going to be Devin Williams in his final season, who had 44 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss? I thought played well in the bowl game. Is it going to be someone like Oklahoma State grad transfer Jeff Roberson, who started, I believe, every game for Oklahoma State last year? Minnesota brought him in to provide some competition there. Or is it going to be some of these younger guys like Joey Gerlach, who, unfortunately for Woodbury's Joey Gerlach, I think everybody's essentially only impression of him is two things. No, number one, a late personal foul against Wisconsin where he hit a guy out of bounds that dang near changed that thing in Camp Randall last year, because regardless of what the head coach of the Golden Gopher football team tells you, momentum is a real thing in sports. I think we all can agree on that. And that swung momentum back into the Badgers' favor. Now Minnesota ultimately recovered, but that was Joey Gerlach's flag. Plus, on the positive note, for anybody out on the East Metro listening, he did block a punt. And anytime I can talk glowingly about special teams, I will do so, Luke, unlike how negative you are going to be about that group here coming up.
Oh, geez.
But is it going to be someone like Joey Gerlach, or is it going to be someone like St. Rita's Matt Kingsbury? I know that people want to see guys like, say, Mason Carrier, Emmanuel Carmo, a couple of in-state linebackers who I still think have very bright futures. I mean, Carmo's only been here a few months. Mason Carrier, I hope, can become a core special team guy here as a redshirt freshman. And then once guys like Roberson and Devin Williams graduate after this year, and I think he's someone that can be in the mix to compete for playing time, is probably a redshirt sophomore. I think, again, like I said, for any linebacker in this program, we've seen it throughout the years. If you want to play on defense, you first got to get your feet wet on special teams, which PJ Fleck refuses to essentially play anyone on special teams on offense, more or less, unless they're a return man or an up back on kickoff. They're very defensive heavy. So you'd hope for guys like Emmanuel Carmo or Mason Carey that get their feet wet. But I'm very curious what this position ends up looking like, because I don't think it's going to be, and you're going to hear this a lot over the next 3-4 months here prior to the Gopher football season. And it was the word of the fall from the Gopher coaches last year, the word versatility. I think there's going to be a lot of guys on this defense playing somewhere between 250 and 400 snaps, more than we've seen in previous years, because I think Danny Collins and, say, at this position, Mariano Sorimarin, they're going to have a lot of sub packages, of which if they go against a smaller team, you're going to have different linebackers in there versus a more Iowa-like running tack, you know, versus an Ohio State, versus an Oregon, versus a Northwestern. They're all very different offenses to game plan against. And I think because there isn't that one bona fide stud like there was in Mr. Do-It-All Cody Lindenberg last year, you're going to see a lot more guys play a lot more snaps as they try to tailor their defense to what everybody does well and get guys off the field when they hopefully are not put in spots and what maybe are their weaknesses. But I think linebacker is going to be a really good position in terms of that is where that's going to be true, where I think you're going to see probably somewhere between 4 and 6 linebackers all play over 100 snaps here this fall.
All right. I think that takes us to defensive back. We don't have a change at coach there, so we don't have to talk in depth about that, except that maybe he has the greatest nickname of all time.
Well, that's what you get for those of us in the East Metro. Matamidi's own swag daddy, Nick Monroe, is still coaching the corners. You got a nice little salary bump here after Corey Heatherman left. He's going to remain there. But speaking of corner, Luke, I mean, you're going to be without Justin Wally, who became a third-round draft pick of the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
Ethan Robinson departs after starting, I believe, every game. He was a UDFA signing with the Miami Dolphins. Jack Henderson, who started 2 years here at Minnesota, is now with, I believe, the Carolina Panthers. Coleman Bryson departs and is now at North Carolina with Bill Belichick and his girlfriend. I don't know if...
Do you think he's older than his girlfriend?
...or if she is yet, but we can get to that at a later date.
Do you think he's older than her girlfriend, Coleman Bryson?
Oof.
I mean, he might be.
I mean, he might be. which that's a whole different podcast about the whole.
We don't need to focus on it. Era. I don't actually know how old she is.
I think she's like 23 to 25.
Which okay, Coleman so pretty Bryson, unlikely.
I think Coleman Bryson's about 21.
Oh, okay.
So she's probably older. But I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think that Bill Belichick thing at North Carolina is going to go well.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll find out.
We'll find out. Doesn't really matter. It's not our problem. So
no, it is not.
It would have been funny. It would have happened last year, and that circus would have come to Minnesota. Then it would have kind of been our problem. We just missed that, and we just missed, you know, actually getting a win. But
look, yeah. I know Cal got decimated, but I still have bad memories of Jobed Best. If I can get
that
name back in your memory,
for
back
sure. I was a student then, man. I totally remember that.
I'm trying to see if my fantasy football chops will remember where Jobed Best ended up in the NFL. I think it was the Detroit Lions.
Wasn't long though, but yeah.
No, but I'm hoping that Gopher football team can get some revenge on based on the Jobed Best days.
Sorry, I totally.
But if they're
took
going a... to do so.
Yeah,
they've got to replace a 4-year starter at corner in Justin Wally. Ethan Robinson played really well for them. And the curious part about it is Minnesota really didn't go out and get an experienced guy like they had the previous two seasons. They went out and got two guys that I think are going to compete at corner, one by the name of Jalen Bowden from Luke. Can you give me the city that North Carolina Central College is in?
No, but I can Google it. That's not something I remember off the top of my head. Let me look.
Well, while you do so, I will tell, for those of you who have been Gopher football fans here for, I'd say, the last 15 years at least, Bowden is from the same high school as someone that is more popular, I would say, in Minnesota recruiting circles than he ever was in terms of an actual impact. Jamel Harbison is from the same high school as him, which that's a blast from the past. A former Mallard Creek receiver that had high expectations in the early seasons under Jerry Kill. Didn't end up working out here, but so Bowden last year as a sophomore started 10 games for North Carolina Central, which I believe is an HBCU school. But he played well for them. 7 passes defended. Only 40% of throws were completed against him. No touchdowns allowed. And then they also brought in a kid from Iowa, which when was the last time the Gopher football team, and I actually don't know this off the top of my head, I'm sure there will be a fan that does, where an Iowa Hawkeye football player transferred to the University of Minnesota. I know it's few and far between because none immediately come to the top of my mind.
I don't know why. This is North Carolina Central University?
Yep.
It's in Durham, North Carolina.
Huh. So it's Raleigh-Durham area. Interesting.
Yeah, I thought you had something like, I thought it was going to be hard to pronounce. I've even been to Durham.
I just truly have no idea where NC Central is.
Okay, yeah, it's in Durham.
But also, Luke, when was the last time an Iowa football player transferred to the University of Minnesota? I don't know. I'm truly, genuinely asking.
I'll try to look it up. I don't know that either.
I don't even know how you find that in this day and age. But
I think I can find it.
So the Gophers took John Nestor, who will be arriving here very shortly. He played in 10 games in each of the last two seasons for the Hawkeyes. The interesting part about this is, it sounds like he played through a hamstring injury last year, which, you know, maybe hypothetically, of course, the Iowa staff wanted him to play through. He did because he wanted to get a shot. It didn't go well for him because of that. Now, from talking with my people that are non-biased down in Iowa City, he was expected to compete for the starting corner job, but left prior to spring ball starting and hit the portal. So John Nestor, I think, has the flexibility to play outside. He could be your new Jack Henderson type inside. But those are the two kind of transfers that they're trying to address corner with. Now, they've also got a gaggle of young guys. Some would even say, if we're talking about Crows, Lucas, a murder of guys that they like in terms of young guys at corner. We're talking about guys like Mike Gerald, Sam Madu, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, Evan Redding, Simon Seidel, guys like that. Plus, you'll have guys like Naeem Parrish and Zach Harden factoring into the mix, hopefully. But the only one I would really say that you can essentially, in my mind, put in at Penn, at least, a corner for Minnesota is Zaquan Bryan, who started in the bowl game for Justin Wally, started three games for Minnesota last year. I think they feel good about what they have in Z, but it's what do they do with on the outside? Because I don't think that Bowden really separated himself immensely from those younger guys we're talking about, or even a guy like Nestor. I think it's very much an open position there at corner.
All right, I am trying to find this. At this point, it looks like he might be the only one.
I just like to send you on little goose chases throughout the episode to keep you engaged.
Okay. I tried a couple of large language models. One gave me just Nestor. Another one gave me someone named Joe Stepanek, a defensive tackle who transferred in 1984. He began his college football career at Waldorf College in Iowa. So that's a big whoops. Not what I asked, because I specifically asked for Iowa.
Thanks,
Hawkeyes. Yeah. Nope. This is why you got to check your work. Nope. So it might very well just be Nestor. It's maybe never happened before.
Well, it's like essentially the only one I can remember transferring in from Wisconsin is Kim Royston, which there's a lot of gopher internet stories about Kim Royston going many, many years back. But this isn't the podcast for that.
Yeah. So I think this might be a first. That's interesting.
Yeah. So when you think about how does Minnesota try to replace Jack Henderson, who played a lot of early down nickel for them, played 500 snaps essentially each of the last two seasons. My answer to you is not one you're going to like. I think it's going to be multiple guys. I don't think it's going to be one guy like Jack Henderson provided for them the last two seasons when he transferred up. Oh my gosh. Where did Jack he transferred from? Southeastern Louisiana. I should know that. One of the most polite young men, yes sir, no sir, you'll ever meet in your entire life. But I think it's going to be a host of guys. I think it could be someone like John Nestor. I think someone like redshirt sophomore Garrison Monroe, who has been waiting his turn at safety, but he now looks ahead of him and sees Coy Parrish, Kerry Brown, Aiden Goosby. And if they're just trying to get the best 11 on the field, I'm not certain that Garrison Monroe isn't one of those best 11 in the right situation. So I think he's going to get work there. I think you'll see Coy Parrish get some work at nickel. I think you'll see Kerry Brown get some work at nickel. I think Jayonte McMillan could potentially see some there. They are very, very open. I saw so many different bodies at nickel here this spring, and even from asking around about what the plan is there. I think that is truly the plan, where it's going to be very much wide open going into the fall to see what maybe some guys like John Nestor can do there. But also, I think you're going to see, because guys like Kerry Brown, Coy Parrish, and Aiden Goosby, in my mind, are three of the best 11 defenders on your defense. Maybe that's not, say, Kerry or Coy's strength necessarily is coming down and playing a nickel. But we saw last year they were two very, very good tacklers for Minnesota. So they're going to mix and match there, at least at the nickel spot going into fall camp. And then I just alluded to it, safety. We went from talking about 12 months ago, safety being the biggest question mark on the defense, to then them proving us wrong because Coy Parrish came on and had a season of all seasons en route to being a first-team All-Big Ten guy. You'd Kerry Brown take a massive step forward. You had Aiden Goosby, when he was healthy, play really well. And now all of those guys return. Plus, I mentioned him already, I think they feel very good about what they have in a guy like Garrison Monroe as well. So it's safety goes from being, in theory, last year, one of the biggest question marks, we were proven wrong, to now it's how many safeties can we get on the field and we feel comfortable in doing so. It's been quite a change here over the last 12 months for Danny Collins' safety room.
Okay. There are definitely question marks all over on defense. I think we felt like last year there were some question marks, ended up being positions of strength, specifically being safety, right? That was a big question mark, and now that's very much a position of strength and was a position of strength during the season. It's always hard to project, but ultimately, defensive end and specifically linebacker and corner are the ones that probably stick out the most to me. And 100%. we'll just see. I think that they've got some guys. It's just they probably don't have the luxury of depth. And you still have some question on some of those guys, but they'll get their opportunity to prove it to us, right? That's the beauty of football.
It is. And that's where, to your point, defensive end, defensive tackle, linebacker, corner, I've got, with some of those positions, top-end concerns about, do we have difference makers there? And some of them, it's, does Minnesota have enough depth there? But I think, like, I will continue to try and beat the drum of, you have to at least find out before the first bye week what you have. Because you can't figure it out against Rutgers, and then when you start to get into Big Ten play there, you've got an opportunity where you don't have a murderer's row in the first three games of the season, at least on paper. And that's where you need to experiment with different things and give some of these younger guys an opportunity to see, okay, well, when the lights are on, maybe they play a little bit different than they do in practice, which that happens. It happens a lot. I played college football. I'm aware of that. That happens all the time. But I just hope that defensively, at least in my mind, Luke, going into the summer, my expectations aren't for another top 10, top 15 defense, just because we talked about it. You lose so many guys who are now on NFL rosters, like Jod Joyner, Danny Strigow, Cody Lindenberg, Ethan Robinson, Jack Henderson, Justin Wally. For a school like Minnesota, you do have to reload to a little bit of an extent. So I still think this can be a good defense. They just need to have a lot of these younger guys who haven't had a chance yet make more of the chances that they do get if they're going to be a good Big Ten defense.
Okay, let's transition to special teams. Bob Ligaszewski returns in his second season at the helm of the special teams. I made a meme last year that went over in some ways, and other ways didn't go over. My point was, you often criticized the previous special teams coordinator, and then it changed and it was largely the same. So I think the question may be less on the actual special teams coordinator and maybe more on the actual head coach. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see in year two if we see any improvements or changes. We didn't see a lot of change in approach on special teams, and I would venture to guess that we won't. But then again, we did see when PJ Fleck can trust, he will change a little bit, at least on offense.
Yeah, I think the older I get and the more time I spend around PJ Fleck's program, to your point, I do think PJ Fleck needs to realize that he himself has a special teams problem. Now, I don't particularly think Rob Wenger was much good. I'm open to seeing one more season of Bob Ligaszewski, but this is going to be a big year for special teams because I don't know what to expect here because Mark Crawford is gone, Minnesota's 4-year punter, which, look, Mark Crawford is one of my favorite humans in my 15 years to cover on the Gopher football team. I stood with him at multiple practices here this spring just talking about life. I mean, maybe it's because he's also in his 30s and I can very much relate to him. But Mark Crawford was going to give you 38 yards if you needed 58. And Mark Crawford was going to give you 38 yards if you needed to pin him inside the 10, which he was very good at. But the interesting part about, say, a spot like punter, Luke, is actions speak louder than words here. And Minnesota went out and not only got one punter, they got two transfer punters here this spring, which that does not say very good things about, in my opinion here, no, because PJ Fleck and his staff haven't said that because they would never say that. They must really not like what they have at punter. And that would be guys like Caleb McGrath. That would be, I don't know how much they got to see of Luke Riercy.
He was playing baseball, right?
Correct. Because he was playing baseball, he's dual sporting it. And I don't blame him for that. Yeah. But Minnesota went out and got two punters. Now, one is another Australian from the same, I believe, town or city in Australia that Mark Crawford was from in Perth. Tom Weston, who comes from a college that I'd never heard of, and I would love for you to look up the college that Tom Weston played at in Oklahoma.
Okay.
While you do that, I'll talk about the other punter then, which was UCLA's starting punter last year in Brody Richter, who I think he was a pretty good punter. I think he was slightly better if you look at it statistically than what Mark Crawford was a year ago. Now, the interesting part is, why bring in two other than you just want the competition? Because Tom Weston, from where, Lucas Buehr?
So he was a punter at Ouachita Baptist University in Arkansas.
Have you ever heard of that in your
entire life? Did I even pronounce that right?
I have no idea how to pronounce it.
Ouachita? It's O-U-A-C-H-I-T-A. These
Minnesota Upers. I have no idea. It's Division II.
Sure.
Division II ball. He was one of the best punters in D2. Like, here's my thing for punting. Is I don't want another Rutgers game to happen. Where that was one of the reasons why Minnesota lost last year, by the way, folks, against Rutgers. And we can talk about that fourth quarter offensive line performance for a long time, or how Corey Heatherman did not blitz Ethan Kaliak Manis for an entire half, which is mind-boggling to me. But the other part of it was PJ Fleck and Bob Ligoszewski were scared out of their minds to even get a punt off because they couldn't do so because they couldn't block anybody. Which, how can he? Like, I just, there's things of that nature that bug me still to this day. If you couldn't tell that by the tone of my voice here, I don't really care if it's Brody Richter or if it's Tom Weston, but I'd be open to one of them being the flip the field guy and the other one being the pin them inside the 15-yard line. Now, they're going to have an open competition that goes all the way up to the Buffalo game, I'm sure, and then through that first bye week. But that was the interesting nugget here is Minnesota's going to, you know, if you were to ask me 5 months ago, I would have told you, well, it's going to be Caleb McGrath or it's going to be Luke Riercy. Well, now I'm going to tell you without a question of a doubt, it's not going to be either one of those two guys, probably. It's going to be Brody Richter or Tom Weston, which two transfer punters, Lucas. Two.
Yeah, that's interesting. So obviously, kicker moves on, right? So do you know if he actually got a shot in the NFL?
I haven't seen Dragon Kessage right. Sign with anybody, which, look, Dragon is also one of the best human beings on the team. And I feel for him in going from the Big Ten kicker of the year to no Big Ten kicker last year missed more field goals than Dragon Kessage.
Yeah.
Like, kicking was an issue last year. And he had that great stretch in between the byes of which he helped win football games. But he missed 8 kicks. Now, I understand if there's any members of that family in Wisconsin listening right now. I'm also aware that he attempted more field goals than anybody else in the Big Ten. So his percentage isn't as bad. It's a little below league average, but he still missed 8 kicks. Now, here's the thing about kicker. I cannot understand for the life of me why Minnesota only added one transfer kicker, and it's a guy in Brady Denneberg who – he worked with Bob Ligoszewski back at Syracuse in the 2023 season when he was the primary kicker there. For those of you wondering, who's going to be the kickoff guy? Number one, I love your attitude, and I love how deep in the weeds you are. It will be Brady Denneberg because he has a Dragon Kessage-esque leg. I will just tell you this, Luke. How does this sound? In Brady Denneberg's career, because he got benched last year at Syracuse, he got replaced midseason. In his career, he is 3 of 9 from 40 plus yards.
So that's good baseball. That's good in baseball, but that's about it.
And the only other guy that I would say is going to challenge him in my mind is going to be a true freshman from Alexandria and Daniel Jackson, which why are those my two options? A guy that has a huge leg, and I'm not disputing that. I think Brady Denneberg might even have a slightly better leg than Dragon Kessage, who had one of the best legs in the Big Ten. I'll just tell you from someone who was at practices, he doesn't always know where it's going.
Yeah.
And it's very concerning to me that the kicker competition is one guy who's 3 of 9 from 40 plus in his career and a true freshman who has never kicked in a big spot moment And I say that with peace and love to the Alexandria. Look, high school lights, Friday night lights, I get it. Like, if he's got to win a game at Cal or he's got to win a game in Kinnick, like, why are those my two options? Like, I don't understand why you take two punters, but then you don't go out and address it. And again,
maybe they're high. Maybe they're high on the Alexandria kid. I
asked that question to some members of the Gopher football program because I went, what am I missing here? And they're like, well, we really like Daniel Jackson. Plus Denneberg had a good spring. Look, they saw 15 practices. I saw three. I'm the first one to tell you I'll be wrong about many things on this Gopher football team, but I'll also toot my own horn and say I know more about this football team than 95% of people on this earth. I just, on paper, I don't understand how, unless Bob Ligashevsky thinks he is the miracle worker and can get Brady Denneberg to hit from 40-plus, and I'll say this, even when he was the primary kicker with Ligashevsky at Syracuse, he went 10 of 16 on field goals.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to see this Gopher football team, which is going to be in a lot of close games, just like they were last year, where it's going to be one possession here, one kick there. I mean, we think about the North Carolina game last year. I mean, missing kicks. And it's, you got to be able to have a kicker you can trust. And I hope that PJ Fleck and Bob Ligashevsky feel like, by the time Buffalo comes or by the time the first bye week comes and goes, that either Daniel Jackson or Brady Denneberg have separated themselves and they can rely on them. But if they can't, I also think this is going to be maybe one of those seasons where PJ Fleck looks at Greg Harbaugh Jr., the offensive coordinator, and say it's 4th and 2 at the Minnesota, or these, say the Wisconsin 35, and it's, we're going for it because we don't want to try this. So I will say this again. I don't hate special teams. I'm just tired of it being so bad for so long. And that's where we haven't even talked about the return game, which I am as bullish on the return game as I've been in 15 years on this gig, because you've got Coy Parrish returning as a second team All Big Ten guy. You've got guys like Christian Driver. AJ Turner was very good at Marshall as a return man. Logan Loya returned punts as well for UCLA. There is no excuse for Minnesota's return game this year. But I'll tell you, Luke, if it would have been me, and again, I can look like a fool and I will admit when I am a fool, hopefully in September, October, November, I would have added another transfer kicker, but we're going to see who is the wiser here in about 4 or 5 months.
Okay. I have some general, just like strategy questions around, or just want to have this conversation around this. I don't know if it's roster limits, I think the right term, right? And as it relates to special teams, because this is, you know, somewhat analogous to the NFL, except the NFL, you can have 53 on an active roster versus now here in college, we're talking about a roster limit of, I believe, is it 85, right?
85 scholarships.
85 scholarships.
There was no limit on walk-ons.
Okay.
Nebraska can have 434 kids on their roster.
Right. So I guess the question still remains, like, you know, traditionally, I think PJ has had a kicker and punter on scholarship, at least one, right? And what do you think that strategy is generally going to be as it relates to specialists like long snapper, kicker, and punter?
I think eventually when the judge does decide on some things, which as we record,
right,
this
it's pending
May 16th, yeah. It's coming. You know, it's coming to where I think eventually there will be a roster limit of 105. And if and when that is the case, I would imagine you want, I don't really care how you do it, you know, two or three kickers, two or three punters, and then two long snappers. Again, I'm very much open to however you want to do that, because you can't exactly, like in the NFL, if your punter or kicker gets hurt.
Yeah, you can't go get one, right?
Yeah, you can just find one on the waiver wire and it can be fine.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the way it works during like, the season.
I love the idea, though, of like, oh, our kicker got hurt. We're going to take him off the roster. Okay, anybody enrolled want to kick? Like,
just yeah, have, can we just go to the soccer teams on campus?
Yeah, just like, can we get one? Like get one from the women's soccer team?
Growing up. Did you also, weren't you the kicker?
Yeah. in high school.
Do you still hold the Wilmer accuracy record?
Absolutely. I have no idea about accuracy, but distance, absolutely not. There was a guy that was a freshman when I was a senior, and he had a much better leg than me. So he holds the record. I think I had like 38 or 39 yards was the best I ever did. So,
I'm going to ask you this too, for one last time. How old is your oldest son again?
He's 6.
He has never seen a Gopher football return touchdown. And if that doesn't change this year, I'm going to be very angry.
Actually, he has seen one. It's because I show him social media highlights. Right as
Rodney, I
showed him Rodney
Demetrius
Smith
Douglas
highlights.
In 2018.
Yeah, I mean, nope. He hasn't lived for a live game moment. But then again, he's seen 2 Wolves Western Conference finals. He's also seen the Gophers win 11 games. He's also seen like a lot more success than you've seen in your life. So is
he still wearing his Tom Gugliotta T-Wolves jersey, or is he wearing his Alexi Shved?
No, he's actually a really big Rudy Gobert guy.
He does know French.
Yeah. No, he, ironically, whatever the Roseville Hoops Association was, I couldn't go with, but he got to go down there all by himself, and he claims that he high-fived Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, and somebody really short who he didn't know.
I like how really short is incredibly relative.
Yeah, it was like it had to probably be Rob Dillingham, but yeah, that was hilarious as well. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, like, once we do get to the 105, I think you're probably keeping somewhere around 7 or 8 specialists, just because you can't go to the waiver wire and get a guy off a practice squad,
right?
In that instance. And that's where, if you ask me to project going into fall camp, again, who's the starting kickoff guy replacing Dragon Kessage? It's going to be Brady Denneberg. I would imagine he's also going to be the kicker to start the season. I just can't see Fleck relying on a true freshman unless Daniel Jackson really comes in and lights it up. And then punter.
But he did.
I think you've got a couple of quality options in Tom Weston and Brody Richter there. It's just, how does it all work together? I guess that's why Bob Ligashevsky makes the incredibly big bucks, and that is not in jest. I think the man makes $400,000.
I'm just going to go back to, he has trusted a freshman before, though. I think it was Michael Lance, right, in that 2019 season.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to make me go back and look.
I'm almost certain.
I don't remember. Well, we've also just seen some snafus of Gopher football yesteryear with the kicking game. Like, I think back to that 2020 Maryland game where, because so many guys got hurt,
yeah,
we thrust some guys into some, yeah, Michael Lance. Well, Michael Lance did beat out, and I believe the guy that was expected to be it was Michael Tarbutt, which I don't remember.
Okay.
I can't remember my 2019 kicking battles, but he also beat out Brock Walker in that instance.
Who do you think the best kicker has been in the Gopher Gridiron Radio era of Gopher football?
I think 2 guys for specific seasons. Dragon Kessage's 2013 season was, 2023 season was incredible.
Yeah.
But so is Emmett Carpenter's.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's Emmett Carpenter.
I think both of them had tremendous seasons. I just want to see more consistency from that position. They've had some like 90th percentile seasons from kickers.
Yeah.
Which it's like, oh, you know,
yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, that's why they won an extra game or two here, which got Minnesota to a better bowl game. But then they've also had some seasons where it's like, boy, if we would have just got better kicking, we could have been at a warm destination bowl game.
And then best punter has to be, oh gosh, now Pete Mortel, right?
You're just saying that because I know Pete Mortel occasionally listens to this podcast. Maybe he's a religious listener. I know he's listened before. You're just saying that because you want to be on the Pete Mortel clout.
No, I was being serious. If we're gonna, you know, rank a kicker, we have to rank a punter, and then I was gonna go to a long snapper, which that's easy. You know who that is,
Brady,
right?
Weeks.
Yeah, Brady Weeks. Like,
why do you hate the long snapper that Minnesota had? Can you name the long snapper, Lucas? Again, it's the famous Brady Weeks line of,
you mean the current
never know
long
my
snapper?
Name in the 4 years, and if you don't, I've done my job.
Yeah, you mean the current long snapper?
Yes. How dare you besmirch Alan Tsukup and his family?
I was going to say, I knew he was number 80.
I think he did a pretty good job snapping as a true freshman last
year. Yeah, I thought so too, but I'm just saying he doesn't, this is the thing.
You never want to know a long snapper's name. We say this every year. I never want to enunciate or have to say his name on this podcast, which no offense.
Yeah, but I had 4 years to remember Brady Weeks because I heard it like every time, almost every other game because they'd be like long snapping Brady Weeks.
The other part of that if you really want to get deep into the weeds here before we sign off, part of the field goal discussion is Mark Crawford was the holder for the last 5 years.
That's a good point.
Not only was he the starting punter for 5 years, he held the football. It's a brand new snap spot hold.
Yeah, for sure. And we also have to acknowledge there has to be a best holder in the Gopher Gridiron Radio era. And that was clearly Pete Mortel.
Well, I was going to say Jacob Herbers, but
no, I mean, and you could make a case for Casey O'Brien too, but Pete Mortel like idolized the holder of the year award.
That look, I'll give you your due there. Pete Mortel should be the holder there. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Lastly, this is just more in fun. So if you're sticking around for this, like you probably have a problem that you're still listening to us chat about this stuff. I just have to know, Ryan, after, camps with Kesich, and then I don't know if it was meals with Mariano, right? Who's the heir apparent on the social media stuff? This is what the people want, Ryan.
I think it's going to be someone like either Quentin Redding, or it'll be somebody like, which, by the way, speaking of return men, Hugh Redding's going to be healthy.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Like,
he's not going to be the punt returner anymore.
Excuse for the return game to suck.
Yeah, like, but also he's not going to be the punt returner anymore, right? We clearly have.
I would imagine it's going to be Coy Parrish, yeah. But look, I don't know what to tell you about special.
Okay, back to the A topic though. So it could be Quentin Redding. I have seen Jackson Howard featured a fair amount in other stuff. Could be him.
I think it's Hugh Redding, or it could be like if we're thinking about who goes to Big Ten Media Days here in 2 months. Maybe that's the way that they get Drake Lindsey there, because Drake Lindsey's got a personality on him of which I think fans will appreciate over the next few years. Maybe that's their way of, say, if they send Darius Taylor, Anthony Smith, I'm trying to think who else they would send right now, but
it's gotta be catchy, right? Like camps the catch. I can't remember what Mariano's was.
I am not an alliteration king. I'll be the first one to tell you.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think if you ask me today, Hugh Redding or Drake Lindsey is kind of that alliteration guy that they'll try to do some fun stuff with on social media. Okay. I will also say before I get some messages, I did forget to say Rylan Kelly is still in the corner mix, as is Darius Green at safety. But I'd just be remiss if I didn't put those two in there. Again, there's a lot of names to talk about. It's just there's so many different guys. And that's the kind of my overarching point about the defense. I want folks to remember, if you're still here, God bless you. But there's going to be so many guys that play 100 plus snaps on this defense to me. And we'll see if Danny Collins and his coaching staff enact that. But I think that's kind of the plan here going into fall camp.
All right. We want to thank everybody for listening. This was kind of our breakdown of the spring as we're heading into now the end of the school year and into the summer. We'll try and do more episodes, obviously. And, for those of us that thought we were dead, those rumors were greatly exaggerated. But you never know. Ryan might die on a cruise going to Alaska. So thank you once again for listening, and go.